The Late Debate with Katie Hannon on RTE Radio 1.
Done deal, but can Boris Johnson get it through the House of Commons? Will Leo Varadkar now cash in his chips and run to the country? And post-Brexit Ireland, what will this deal mean for trade and jobs? And if it creates an all-Ireland economy, do we need to talk about a united Ireland? All that and more on tonight's Late Debate, but first the news with Peter Ferris. Thanks, Peter. Good evening and welcome to The Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannon and joining me tonight I have Fianna Fáil TD for Offaly and spokesperson on public expenditure and reform, Barry Cowan, Fine Gael Senator and Shannon spokesperson on finance, Ciarán O'Donnell, Jennifer Kavanagh, lecturer in law and Waterford Institute of Technology, economist Jim Power and Christina Finn, political correspondent for thejournal.ie, and joining us from our Fáil studio, Sinn Féin Senator Pádraig McLoughlin. We want to hear from you, so get in touch. You can text us on 5155. Email us on latedebate@rte.ie or you can tweet to @latedebate_rte. So just 7 days after Leo Varadkar went into that three-hour private meeting with Boris Johnson in Thornton Manor, we have a deal. The British Prime Minister was in high spirits as he declared the divorce was finally agreed today. The Taoiseach's response was more bittersweet.
I hope very much now that my fellow MPs in Westminster do now come together to get Brexit done, to get this excellent deal over the line and to deliver Brexit without any more delay.
I really regret that the United Kingdom is leaving the European Union, but I absolutely respect their decision to do so.
If you leave me now, you'll take away the biggest part of me.
It's a little bit like an old friend that's going on a journey or an adventure without us, and we really hope it works out for them. But I think there will always be a place at the table for the United Kingdom if they ever choose to come back. And I'm certain no matter what happens, we will have good relations with the United Kingdom.
How could we end it all this way? Well, we don't know if it is ended, of course, yet. Of course, the DUP decided that they weren't prepared to go on that adventure with Boris Johnson. So the big question tonight is, can he get it through Westminster? I'm joined on the line now by John Rentall, Chief Political Commentator with The Independent. John, the most overused phrase of today had to be, we've been here before.
but is
Boris Johnson in a better position than Theresa May as he takes this deal back to Westminster?
Well, he's going to lose the vote by a smaller number, yes. But I'm not sure if that's going to be much comfort to him, to be honest.
And can we say tonight that he will lose this vote? Because a week ago we said he wouldn't get a deal.
That's true. Fair enough. But that, I mean, I was assuming that he was going to keep the DUP on board. And that was a completely understandable strategy. You could understand why that would work and how it would deliver the votes in the House of Commons. But if he doesn't have the DUP, the votes simply aren't there. I mean, it is just about conceivable that he could get a majority if a lot of Labour MPs vote for it, and I don't see why they would. And if none of the possible Conservative MPs switch sides. I mean, he's got to balance Eurosceptic Conservatives and soft Brexit Conservatives, and I suspect he's going to lose a handful along the way and fall short.
So, just because I know you've been crunching numbers all day, the last attempt by Theresa May to get a deal through was defeated by 58 votes. So, am I right in saying he needs to hold on to as many of those votes as possible and get another, 30 MPs to flip?
31, yes. He needs, because the Conservatives have lost a by-election in the meantime to the Liberal Democrats. So he needs to persuade 31 MPs who didn't vote for it before to switch sides and to hold on to every single one that did vote for it for Theresa May's deal. That's a very tall order if the DUP are going to stay in the against column, because he needs those 10 votes are the difference between victory and defeat. And that's why I thought it was extraordinary how insouciant the Prime Minister seemed today. I mean, and everybody was sort of going along with it as if this is a huge breakthrough and all that. And I'm sure, you know, it was quite an achievement to reach an agreement with the EU. But that's not the difficult bit. The difficult bit is getting it through the Parliament.
Of course, one of those votes that he needs to flip is his own brother.
Yeah, well, indeed, yes. I mean, you know, wouldn't it be a Greek drama if he lost by one vote and that was his brother's vote?
Talk us through then, okay, if you say that it's nigh impossible by your reckoning and your count for him to get it through, what happens then? Talk us through the scenarios that could play out on Saturday if this vote fails to pass.
Well, I mean, then we are in a nightmare scenario. I mean, well, it hasn't been that pleasant for the past 3 years, but I mean, we really are then in the most extraordinary position and the most naysaying parliament, you know, ever. This parliament is very good at voting against things and very bad at voting in favour of them, because I don't think this parliament is going to vote for a general election, which would be the obvious way to try to cut through the deadlock. I don't think they're going to vote for a referendum. It's difficult to see how that could happen in any case under a government that didn't want it. And so it looks as if we're condemned to waste another 3 month extension, you know, and European leaders will be just left scratching their heads saying, you know, what did we grant that 3 month extension for?
And of course, a lot of the talk today was that Boris Johnson was trying to bounce the various members of the European Council to say, this is it, there will be no extension, this or no deal. That's unlikely to happen, I would have thought.
Well, I wondered if he was having some private conversations with any of the European leaders about that, but I was told that that wasn't his approach. His approach is very much that the British country and the British Parliament must decide their future, not have their future decided for them by European leaders, and therefore he's going to stake everything on this vote on Saturday. Maybe he thinks that there are MPs that I don't know about who can be persuaded, but it is very difficult to see how he gets those numbers.
And I mean, if we look at the scenes from Brussels today, the backslapping and the body language between Boris Johnson and the other European leaders, like they were only short of lifting him shoulder high.
I didn't understand it at all. I mean, I thought, you know, they should have been cast down by the failure to get the DUP to agree. And yet everybody seemed to just think that was a sort of small detail, whereas it's the only thing that matters is whether it can be passed by the House of Commons. And, you know, all the indications are that that's going to be extremely difficult.
One way or another, is Boris... Well, obviously, there's going to be an election, one way or another.
Well, you say that, but I can't see how MPs are going to vote for it. I mean, you know, it's not in their interest if they think they're going to lose.
Well, what I mean is that even if they get an extension, if there is another period of hiatus, ultimately there will be this Parliament cannot stumble on for much longer, one would have to think.
You would have to think, but you know, you'd be amazed what this Parliament is capable of doing
or of not doing.
Yes.
Okay, John, well, listen, thank you for joining us with that hot take. Best of luck with the grueling days of political analysis ahead. And we will
no doubt
talk to you again in the coming weeks. I want to go to the panel now, but before I do that, just because this is a very complicated agreement, I just want to hear the Taoiseach explaining the essential elements of what was agreed in this deal now.
There will be, as a consequence of this agreement, a transition period running at least until the end of 2020, but extendable until the end of 2022, in which nothing will change, thus giving certainty to citizens and businesses in Ireland, in Britain, and also across the European Union. And the new solution kicks in for a four-year period after that. And when that period ends, a decision will lie with the Northern Ireland Assembly as to whether they want it to continue or not. There will be regulatory alignment on goods, so that any checks will happen at the ports, and a customs arrangement that allows Northern Ireland to stay in the UK customs territory, but is organised in such a way that allows them to benefit from any trade deals that the United Kingdom might do. But above all, what I can say today is that our objectives as Ireland and as Europe have been met.
Our objectives as Ireland and Europe has been met, says Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Barry Cowan, I'm sure you'll want to take this opportunity to congratulate Leo Varadkar on single-handedly rescuing us from the jaws of no deal.
Well, I want to pay tribute and compliment him and his team, and indeed the team of officials within the various departments who have worked closely with their EU counterparts and indeed their UK counterparts for the role they have played in bringing us to this juncture. But we caution that by saying we've been there before, we're there again. There's still some time and space, one would hope, even for Boris Johnson to refrain from the high-fiving and, you know, investigate the possibilities that there may be within the provision of the agreement that talks about consent, that talks about they producing a paper to explore the possibilities that might meet the demands of consent. I think Barnier and the EU have left that to the UK to a simple majority is described as, but it's not defined within the agreement, which I think offers an opportunity.
What, do you think there might be still room to get the DUP back
so.
On board?
I hope so. You know, all agreements of this grave difficulties associated with it have gone down to the last minute of the last hour of the last day, and this should be no different, or I don't expect it to be any different. And I know the vote is tight. There are many, you know, I would think within the Labour Party whom are in Leave constituencies that might well go across the floor on Saturday, which could leave it a lot tighter than your previous caller mentioned. But if he is committed to this, if he wishes to see it work, and we all want to see it work, we all want to see, we don't want to see a cliff edge situation. There is, you know, in the response of business, the response of the communities, and all points towards finding a resolution that meets with everyone's approval. And, you know, the only ones that have difficulty with it are the DUP party. And, you know, they have a history in this regard. They can't necessarily be allowed to use the mechanisms that are within the Good Friday Agreement, and they can't pick and choose from the Good Friday Agreement. It may well be that the Good Friday Agreement and the consent issue is not suitable in this instance, because it was for a time that was different and gravely different 20 years ago.
But Kieran O'Donnell, it is a big ask, or it would be a big ask, for the DUP to back this deal, because it absolutely does the one thing they said they could never do, which is support a border down the Irish Sea, quite apart from the consent issue, which is another whole kettle of fish.
Well, this particular agreement, the backstop has now evolved into a protocol in terms of how we, like, the backstop was there that unless and until we had a mechanism that would work. We now have a mechanism put forward that deals with ensuring there's no hard border, but provides a consent mechanism for the Northern Assembly politicians to decide the future there. And I think that's the key element.
But I'm sure the DUP will look at that and say, well, effectively, this is instead of just being an insurance policy, which was, you know, going to be there on until something else came along, now we have a situation where if it goes with a simple majority, this is permanent. This is policy. This is where we're going to be.
There's been a modification.
This is something that comes up for effective renewal every 4 years. And if you look at the Good Friday Agreement and you take into account that when the Brexit vote took place, the majority of the people of the North voted to remain. And I think what you want to do here is to put a mechanism in place. There's no protocol that has effectively taken over from the backstop, because it meets all those requirements. And I think when the DUP look at it, I was watching various UK channels this evening, and certainly there's support, strong support within the unionist community for this particular deal. They cautiously welcome it. I saw the Small Firms Federation in the North. I saw various business people in the North who are of unionist extraction, and they're very, very wish to see that this particular deal is put in place. And if you look, like, when it comes down to it, and you look at the actual substance of what's in this deal, this is a very good deal for the North. It's a good deal for us down south as well, but particularly for the North.
But do you see the difficulty that the DUP must have with this?
I can see difficulty in terms of their background and where they're coming from. But when the North has to evolve over time, when you look at the Good Friday Agreement itself, it speaks about consent. It was all across all divides. You have a devolved assembly in the north that needs to get up and running. And I think what this particular agreement, the draft agreement, does is that it ensures that the future of the north is very much in the hands of the politicians who are democratically elected by the people of the north, and the DUP are central to that.
Okay, I think we have a clip of Sammy Wilson, who's of course the Brexit spokesperson for the DUP, who was speaking today in the wake of this deal.
I know that between now and Saturday, considerable pressure will be put upon members of the Conservative Party. There's going to be a general election probably within the next 2 or 3 months. They'll be threatened with losing their seats and not being selected. They'll be told that this is not such a bad agreement anyway. The best possible spin will be put on it. In the past, Theresa May thought she had got people on board and then found to her surprise that they weren't. And I suspect that there's every chance that this might happen again on Saturday.
That was Sammy Wilson. Pádraig McLoughlin, can you see where the DUP are coming from on this and why they have the difficulties they have?
The DUP, advocated for Brexit. They have an alliance with the far right of the Conservative Party. The European Research Group are there.
They don't have much of an alliance there tonight, I would say.
Well, they're certainly running out of road. They advocated for this. The majority of the people of the north of Ireland voted against it. But the DUP insisted that this was a whole of United Kingdom decision. So the views of the majority didn't count as far as the DUP were concerned. They opposed Theresa May's deal, which led to obviously Theresa May being removed as British Prime Minister. And now here we are again. So I don't have any sympathy for their position whatsoever, because it flies in the face of not just the majority of people in the north, but the business community, the farming community, civic society, all of the voices in the north of Ireland, all of the political parties except the DUP. So they have acted recklessly. And if they insist that Brexit must go ahead, they must surely have known that it was going to come to this. I mean, this is the compromise. Remember that the Theresa May withdrawal agreement was a huge compromise. Brexit is not good for the people of Ireland. There's no good Brexit. There's no fairy tale ending here. So this was a compromise. This was, to facilitate the decision, particularly of the English people. And even the compromise is unacceptable to the DUP. I think that they've got themselves in a very bad place, and I'm not so sure they're going to wake up any time and smell the coffee. But they are. If they bring this thing down on Saturday, I tell you, if I were somebody who fervently believed in unionism and remaining in the United Kingdom, they're doing everything they can to scupper that in the long term, or even in the medium term.
I just see a tweeter tweeting, Ben Moran tweeting, how about Sinn Féin doing the honourable thing and voting the deal through? Because of course, by some of the number crunching we've seen today, the suggestion is they might be just, Boris Johnson might be just 7 votes short of getting it over the line, which coincidentally would put the Sinn Féin's position very crucial.
Well, let's say as Irish Republicans that we all of a sudden decided to take an oath of allegiance to the British Crown and pledge our fealty to a foreign state. And let's say, for instance, we are willing to completely disregard the democratic wishes of the nationalist people who elected 7 abstentionist Sinn Féin MPs in 2017 after Brexit. Say we're willing to do all of those mad things. Why in God's earth would we go and vote for Brexit? Why would we vote in favour of Brexit in the British Parliament? There has to be a reality check in all of that. It is up to those who advocate.
So you're saying that the DUP should go and vote in favour of Brexit, but you wouldn't do it if you were taking your seats?
But let's be very clear. The Scottish Nationalist Party won't be voting for Brexit on Saturday. We are opposed to, in the context of... Let me finish the point, Kieran. Because I'm pretty certain that Fine Gael will not be contesting the election in the north when it takes place in the very near future.
Deal with the subject at hand, Paul.
No, because you're about to come in and argue the case for us taking the oath of allegiance and so on and so forth.
I want basically an argument that your leader came out today and welcomed this particular proposal. This particular proposal provides that under consent in the Northern Assembly, of which Sinn Féin are a major part, will be able to make decisions on a four-year period as to whether they wish to continue with this or not. Now, it's quite ironic that you will deal with that in the Northern Assembly, yet you're unwilling to take part in the being democratically elected based on the vote of the people of the North that they wished to remain, to take up your positions in the UK Parliament and to vote to ensure that this proposal went through. I think there's an ironic twist
there. Well, Kieran, let me respond to your point, OK? In the 2017 general election, the issue of abstentionism after Brexit, that's when it took place, was front and centre in the debate. When the debate started, there were four Sinn Féin MPs and three SDLP voted for by the nationalist community. After that election was over, the nationalist people voted for seven Sinn Féin MPs and no SDLP MPs. They voted for MPs not to take their seats in the British Parliament.
A lot has changed in the last two years.
Kieran, that was their democratic decision. Here's my point to you, Kieran.
Briefly, because we do want to move on to that.
Irish Republicans, the Sinn Féin, we abstain from the British Parliament. Fine Gael abstains from the North of Ireland. That's the reality. You've never contested an election for 100 years in the North of Ireland.
Do you agree with the point? I think we understand this point
because it has been debated in this studio and other studios before.
Sinn Féin have a mandate.
They campaigned on an abstentionist policy and they were elected on that.
Things have changed significantly in the last 2 years, and we've moved to a space where there is now an agreement that there needs to be a deal. Sinn Féin came out and welcomed that deal today, which they have consent on in the Northern Assembly, and yet they could prevent that deal from going through by not taking up positions in the British Parliament.
Okay, you've both made your points. Jennifer, John Rentall there at the top of the programme, very downbeat about the possibilities of this going through. Now, that's not the analysis I've heard all day, and there's been a lot of different takes on how Boris Johnson might, you know, just about squeak this over the line. What do you think, looking at the numbers?
Well, looking at the previous votes, he hasn't managed to get anything voted through at all. So if you go on the previous voting history, you'd be quite pessimistic of seeing it going through. But I mean, what's coming out from
the URG tonight, like people who normally would have been very circumspect, certainly have gone a long way over the line with him now.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the former Conservative members who are now independents, they don't want a no deal. And bear in mind that what is there now tonight is basically the extension onto what Theresa May got. It's a protocol. It's written in there as a protocol to it. So for the people who turned around and voted no to Theresa May's deal, but think this is the most fantastic thing that has ever happened, you know, there's a certain amount of kind of, you could almost say kind of misogyny about it, because what they've actually done is the backstop has become more of a sidestep. They've fleshed it out a bit more so people have an idea of how it's going to work. But the bones of what's there is still what's there.
But will that matter if the political expedience thing to do is do the deal, vote for the deal?
It basically comes down to all the positions that they take, because there's certain members of the ERG who are saying, like Ian Duncan Smith, that they're going to hold their fire on it. They look at it in more detail. There could be shenanigans happen with the standing orders when it comes to it being voted on Saturday. It is literally the great unknown, but considering it's about seven votes out of seven that he's lost, you would find it hard to see how he would get this through. And then remember, it's going to have to go to the House of Lords as well.
Jim Power, how are you reading it?
Well, based on the analysis I've been hearing all day, it's going to be extremely difficult, because one thing Boris has not done over the last couple of months is win any friends in Parliament. I mean, he's peed off virtually everybody at this stage. So the notion that he can now turn around and bring all these allies in behind him seems fanciful. I could be wrong, but I find it hard to see the thing being voted through on Saturday. And in fact, if I was somebody who was in favour of Remain, I wouldn't be voting for it on Saturday, because if you get it extended, which legally he will have to under the Benn legislation to the 31st of January, then there is a possibility that it might never happen. The further out is delayed. And I suppose that the counter to that would be, if it were extended out, and there's a chance it might never happen, that might bring some of the hard Brexiteers in on board supporting this. So I suppose there's lots of swings and roundabouts here, but based on what we understand, I think, and I would kind of agree with John Renicle's analysis earlier, it's going to be really difficult to do it. The DUP position, you know, you were saying at the beginning that this, there's two aspects of this that goes totally against their red line.
Their blood red lines.
But everybody has compromised at this stage. I mean, Boris has compromised. The Irish government has compromised on the backstop. So it's time now for the DUP to show a little bit of flexibility.
They've compromised themselves on the east-west issue, you know, which, you know, the border and the Irish Sea, which wasn't there previously. They're a bit muddled in relation to the customs issue.
Oh, the DUP?
Yeah. Insofar as they want it out of the EU, yet they want it out, and they're out of they're within the UK, but playing by the rules of the EU. It's almost as if it's a Gaelic match. No, it's a soccer match, but you can handle the ball. You know, it's hard for them to square that. But I think the more people see the abyss that is a no deal Brexit, the more reality begins to bite. And you know, it's difficult for them as it is to explain their stance, considering with 27% of the vote in the last election, I'm sure that's been dissipated further, because as we've heard, the various factions within Northern Ireland and the South, you know, believe that this is the best possible result we can get at this stage, and the more that, you know, they won't be able to explain the alternative, because the alternative is, as I said, an abyss for us all.
I want to let Christine in.
I think exactly. Around Leinster House today, obviously people were sort of saying the mood music was that it's going to be very tough to get that through in Westminster. But I think with the DUP, particularly as you're saying, I think perhaps with their fear of this is the four-year vote, is this opening this up to border poll issues and United Ireland talk 4 years down the line, 8 years down the line. It opens up massive debate issues for them, and obviously that's the last place that they really want to go.
But we've seen inaction in relation to the Assembly, you've seen inaction in relation to the Executive. The North-South bodies haven't been up and running and been as effective as they could possibly be, and the same to a lesser extent in relation to East-West. So, I mean, you know, a border poll can only be against the backdrop of successful devolution, of successful interaction, of successful delivery of the democratic process. And we haven't seen that. But we can build on what's there. You have to remember there's a generation in the North now that grew up in peacetime. There's a generation that sees the opportunities that have arisen in the North. And there's a generation that can see that you can get the best of both worlds from this deal. You can retain your, a trade deal into the future, you can pick and choose how you can deliver.
Yeah, one thing that kind of surprised me, I felt over the last few weeks that the DUP recognised they're on the wrong side of history and were looking for a way out of the corner in which they'd backed themselves.
They've got themselves into a tougher one.
Yeah, they have indeed. So I think today's stance, I was surprised, I have to say, because I thought early this morning they would come on board eventually.
I think it'd be very interesting when the DUP meets business people in the North on the ground. And I think one of the interesting things here is, even the Benn vote was about that there would not be a no deal. We now have a deal that's going before the British Parliament. I think what would be very interesting is that over the next number of days, would people reflect and say that whether they may have disagreed in the past, but now they have a deal. It certainly deals with a lot of the issues around the backstop that are now very much defined in terms of a protocol. And I think it's going to be, a fascinating number of days. And I think if the DUP reflect on it, they're getting any deal that the UK does, the North is party to that as well. And you look across a multitude of areas, and really, in substance, the North is gaining substantially. And furthermore, it's in there, the continuous part of the UK, the pass of the customs territory. They've come with a technical point in terms of the rules will apply under the customs, we'll say the EU. But I think that if you're looking at overall, and I think there's a huge amount of fatigue, people want to move on. this is a deal that's been negotiated in good faith, and I would hope that it would be passed in the British Parliament.
If it does get passed, there must be a lot of people whispering in Leo Varadkar's ear now, go for it, this is the moment.
Yeah.
You know, don't let this moment pass, capitalise on it.
Yeah, speaking to a lot of TDs today, there seemed to be a lot of people saying that there was 95% certainty that if a deal was done on Saturday that he'd be out the gap and hoping to get a good bounce from that.
I'll have to be the 5% that states that the Taoiseach over a long period of time, back as far as August of last year, has stated that he wished to see and wrote to Micheál Martin that he wished to see that we would have the government would run up to next summer, and more particularly has qualified that in terms of May of next year.
Ah, but what's said on in public can often be a lot different than
consistent that
you've been consistent in public but not so much in private.
Yeah, there was a budget passed.
I've heard nothing different in private.
There was a budget passed last week.
Do you talk to anyone, Kieran?
Listen, there was a budget passed last week. It can't, you have to give effect to it with the finance bill, with the social welfare bill. There are issues that we and others sought to influence in relation to the delivery of services.
You're saying Barry May has made education agreement to May?
No, what I'm saying is in the first instance, let's ensure that the budget is given the effect it requires by virtue of passing the
adequate
legislation.
The social welfare bill has been moved up the agenda, I think.
Well, it might well be moved up the agenda, but that doesn't mean it'll pass in a day or two.
But there are elements of it that have to be scrutinised and analysed.
Okay, one voice.
Sorry.
You know, and you want to talk about housing. Like, I mean, I'm not going off message, Kieran. If you want to have a substantive debate.
No, deal with the particular. I'll have a substantive issue any day of the week. But deal with this particular issue.
We've afforded you and your party and the government time and space in order to ensure that this country was well represented in relation to the delivery of a deal which might have the potential to save us from the abyss. That's how responsible we've been. We're not going to get irresponsible overnight and have an election before we see the implications of the same deal. That's our first duty.
We're not looking for an election. We're looking for a commitment from Fianna Fáil to next month.
Well, will you bring forward the finance bill and the social welfare bill?
No. That's a different issue, Barry.
It's not a different issue. Deal with the issue
that the Taoiseach has repeatedly stated and wrote to Micheál Martin,
but
your leader, back
here,
last August.
Will your party, I am sure, whether it's your pay grade or beyond it, surely you'll bring forward the social welfare and the finance bill to give effect to the budget, will you not?
But that's the norm, Barry. That happens the normal way. I'm asking you a specific question.
It's to know if you call an election tomorrow.
No, it's a specific question that, in fairness, that has been consistently repeated by the Taoiseach over the last year. Oh. To Micheál Martin, that we would like to govern this country until next May to give it absolute security. The question is, how does Fianna Fáil feel about it?
Fianna Fáil would be gone long ago were it not for Brexit. Let's get that straight. Because, you know, don't confuse our support for the government in relation to the Brexit issue
with
the contention that you might be doing a good job in relation to many other issues, because you're not.
Okay. Gentlemen, we will break this up and take a break because I do want to move on to the other items on our agenda.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back to Late Debate. In studio tonight, Fianna Fáil's Barry Cowan, Fine Gael's Kieran O'Donnell, law lecturer Jennifer Kavanagh, economist Jim Power, Christina Fenn from thejournal.ie, and in our foil studio, Sinn Féin Senator Páirí McLoughlin. Now, we're getting a lot of reaction, a lot of mixed reaction in. The bottom line, this is one for you, Páirí. The bottom line is that if Sinn Féin did take their seats in Westminster for the Saturday Brexit vote, and if they went back into government in Northern Ireland, their support in the South would surge. I'm not arguing one way or another, says this tweeter, but that's the reality as many see it. Then we have the opposite view also coming in. I am no supporter of Sinn Féin, but your Sinn Féin's guess is spot on in his Brexit comments. So says John. Imagine another one here, a tweeter. Imagine the hullabaloo over Sinn Féin going in to pass a vote. Anyway, in my opinion, no Irish Republican should swear an oath to a foreign queen. I want to move on to the issue of a united Ireland, because you mentioned there, Christina, this is one of the fears from the DUP's perspective, is that if this consent issue is built in and a vote on this is built in every 4 years, that this opens up a conversation about this and builds it into the future political dynamic. if this deal were to pass, or a deal like this were to pass, putting an all-Ireland economy separate to the UK economy, is it not natural that politics will follow economics, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Good Friday Agreement had set in motion eventually a united Ireland driven by demographics, and possibly what has been agreed in the last 24 hours pushes that forward a little bit. But I think inevitably that's where it's going. It's a question of how long it takes, because the unionist side will become a smaller and smaller part of the population and the electorate up there. So, you know, I think it's inevitable. But I suppose the biggest challenge would be getting both sides of the border to actually vote in favour of United Ireland. I suspect if you held two referenda in the morning on each side, it would be rejected, because I think from an economic perspective, you know, there is the 12 billion sterling subvention or thereabouts that the UK government pumps into Northern Ireland. And Northern Ireland does not have a very dynamic functioning economy. You know, it's whatever 60% public sector driven.
You can understand, I suppose, why the DUP would be, you know, fighting their corner and wanting to ensure that that conversation didn't progress any further.
Yeah.
But the conversation about a united Ireland has surfaced ever since the Brexit vote came to be, so much so that political parties have tried to stifle it to a degree in terms of it's been going on in the media and all the rest. People have been discussing the Good Friday Agreement, what it means and the pathway towards it. Politicians very much of, it's not right now, we can't talk about that now, this will only kick off you know, things up the north that we're not ready for. But then there's the other side of the argument that there's no harm perhaps in having a preparation to the sideline of the Brexit talks, because if we're going down that road and if something happens, a border poll is called unexpectedly in a couple of years' time or when that might be, you'd want to have your ducks in a row to ensure that you know exactly the taxes, how much it cost, all of that would take massive. We can only see 3 years.
Well, I want to bring Pádraig McLoughlin, because I'm conscious that he's at a disadvantage not being sitting around the same table as ourselves. Pádraig, I mean, some might say that this deal and what a Fine Gael Taoiseach has pulled off in the last week has done more for the cause of United Ireland than Sinn Féin has managed to do over many years.
Well, there's no doubt that Brexit has exposed the nonsense of the partition of our island, two economies, two taxation systems, two public services on a small island of just over 6 million people. That's a nonsense. And, you know, the thing that frustrates me, I mean, Nicola Sturgeon, I think all spectrums of Irish opinion agree, is a, you know, pretty tremendous political leader. Whenever she addressed the Shannon, all of the senators of all political hues were lining up to get their photograph taken with her and get their selfies taken with her. And she's advocating, as we speak, for a second referendum on Scottish independence. Remember, the first referendum was 55 to stay in the United Kingdom, 45 to have independence. So this is a very divisive issue in Scotland, a very emotive issue. Remember that.
But Pádraig, can I put to you, though, it hasn't the baggage with it that would necessarily be around a border poll in this jurisdiction.
Well, I would argue differently. I mean, I've a pretty strong affinity with Scotland. I know the country pretty well, and it is a very divided country in terms of the issue of, you know, their loyalty to the British history. I mean, there were, you know, huge numbers of Scottish people died in the wars. These are the arguments that unionists make for, you know, maintaining their place in the United Kingdom, is their emotional connection to the Crown, their sense of British identity, their sacrifice for Queen and or King and country. That is exactly the same arguments that you have in Scotland. So
Scotland didn't come through 30 years of armed struggle that is, you know, now just 20 years in the back mirror. Well, surely that is the crucial difference in this debate.
I'll say this to you. We're 20 years after the Good Friday Agreement, and surely we can have a debate about Irish unity. And of course it has to be about the economic benefits. I mean, there have been a number of excellent reports that have done economic modelling. They've looked at the model and the experience of Germany when they were, you know, reunified. And they have demonstrated that there's no doubt that a united Ireland would be in the economic benefit of all of our people, north and south. So I think the economic arguments are one hands down. The issue is guaranteeing, and I'm conscious of this because Nicola Sturgeon
Sturgeon and the SNP have a responsibility to all of those people who are emotionally and, you know, and genuinely see themselves as British and fear all of that being lost. We have a responsibility, and I know this, to convince unionism of their place in a new Ireland, and that's our task. But we have to have the debate. We can't shy away from the debate any longer.
Kieran.
Yeah, I mean, these are two separate issues. The issue at the moment is there's an agreement, a draft agreement on effectively Brexit, where UK is breaking away from the EU. Two totally separate issues. We believe as a government there isn't the support there for a border poll in the north. We believe it would be divisive and provide uncertainty that's not required at the moment. The most important thing at the moment is to ensure that whatever outcome from Brexit arises, that the Good Friday Agreement, and it's defined in the Good Friday Agreement in terms of a future for a border poll.
Can I just put you in what Pádraig just said there? We have to start having this conversation.
This particular conversation is ongoing at all times. I don't buy that argument. It's being discussed.
That's not correct. That's just not correct.
No.
That's just not correct. You won't even form a committee in the Oireachtas.
Sorry. The most important thing at the moment is to ensure that any outcome of Brexit ensures that the Good Friday Agreement, the terms of it are upheld, that we ensure that the trading relation between North and South, that there's no hard border,
if you cast your mind down, it's great, obviously all the things seem to be in the agreement today.
Yeah.
There's timelines that are laid out in that consent issue of 4 to 8 years. Okay, it's fine for us now to sit here and say, great, that's all done and dusted and we just need to get that through. But 4 years down the road, we're going to be having a similar conversation about what's happening up in the north, how those economic and customary issues are working for the north, and there's going to be questions raised about, would we be better in the United Ireland or not?
There's mechanisms within the Good Friday Agreement in terms of border taking place.
Okay, I want Barry Cowan to come in on this.
Those particular reasons have not arisen as yet.
Okay, Barry Cowan, are we having the conversation that we should be having?
Well, we're having it right now, amongst other things. But I think, Jim alluded to it. When the Good Friday Agreement was put in place 20 years ago, in December 99, having been agreed in 98, you would have thought in the correct scheme of things, maybe 30 years later, there would be the potential for the consent to be sought to arrive at a United Ireland, which would allow for it leaving the UK. But in the meantime, what have you had? In the last 3 years, you haven't had an assembly. The democratic process hasn't worked. It's gravely unfortunate, a great abdication of responsibility, many would say, on the part of those who were at the heart of that decision. And you can only hope to aspire towards a United Ireland. I have that aspiration too. When you build consensus, when you can show that politics works, when you can show that the institutions that are provided within the Good Friday Agreement are adhered to, and that economic benefits accrue, social harmony begins to accrue also. You've seen, as I said to you, there's a generation that has been reared now in peacetime, and they can see the benefit of it, and they can see the potential that's there. But they are looking at this issue very closely in relation to the impasse we are at presently in relation to Brexit. And, you know, the legacy of those who were at the heart of arriving at a consensus in relation to the Good Friday Agreement, one has to recognise the concessions that was made on the part of all sides. And that they are an example to those that are there now, that you can't always rely on your own base, that you have to go beyond that in the public interest, and to show the sort of leadership that people would recognise and support and follow. And there might be well an opportunity 10 years beyond where we originally thought that opportunity would be.
Well, I mean, Jennifer, talking about the conversation about Ireland and the island, that there's been great research done by Queen's University on the whole issue of the economics. And it's not as dire as we would think, that they've actually produced the research to say that actually it's not going to be as much of a drain as we thought. And as Pádraig has already said, that when West and East Germany was reunited, that there was all derogations from European law brought in for that rebalancing to be done. It's actually written into the treaties on state aid. So the European Union already said that if there was to be a no-deal Brexit, they would release some of the natural disaster funds to Ireland to balance it up. And if we were to have a border poll, if it was to be successful, I wouldn't see Europe standing in the way of this. I would see them actually supporting this. And Jim's right on the demographics. They are moving towards people who are more nationalist orientated, having the majority. So I think the people of Northern Ireland are moving beyond the politics isn't working.
Yeah. I actually think that the withdrawal deals that have been on the table, Theresa May's two and the current one that was agreed yesterday, Northern Ireland is getting the best of all worlds here. There's the potential to create the Singapore of Europe in Northern Ireland. And I think sort of 10 years of that sort of backdrop for Northern Ireland would put it into a much stronger position than it's in at the moment. The reunification of Germany actually was incredibly painful for a number of years.
Oh, and it still is. There's still areas of Germany that doesn't feel like it's benefited from
it. I just don't accept that if you had a united Ireland in the morning, things would get better. There'd be
but they have the law there that is going to allow for that reunification to be done.
Can I just ask one question here in terms of the politics? Okay, the economics, you know, there'll be a debate about that, and can it be afforded? How will it play out? But the pure politics of a situation where you now will have a unionist minority deeply disaffected about their new political situation. I mean, should there be a debate around if we were to go down this road, rejoining the Commonwealth in some way, putting in place something that would assuage the concerns of that community?
Marilyn MacDonald has already said that she would be open to having that discussion about rejoining the Commonwealth.
Let's ask Pádraig McLoughlin.
Yeah, I just want to say this. I mean, because I know
on that point, just on that point particularly.
Yeah, no, I think that, and you know, I would say very clearly on that we have to be generous and imaginative in terms of the new. I mean, I say a new Ireland. I mean, I don't want to join up the existing two states. There are many, you know, not least our health service and our housing crisis in the south. That you know, what I want to see is a new country, and that means that we have to have a country where those of all traditions and those who are new communities, new peoples coming to our country can pledge their allegiance to that. So that's a challenge for all of us. But you know what really frustrates me is that the old political parties and commentators have shied away from this debate, but this debate is happening. It's raging in civic society in the north. There's all sorts of new voices. There was a recent opinion poll by Lord Ashcroft. You know, this poll was a majority for a United Ireland in the north. You know, if you look at the age demographics, substantial support, 60% for United Ireland and those under 35. So, you know, this is inevitable. And
yeah, the potential is there, Pádraig.
Do you think it's inevitable?
A lot of moderate politicians have been elected to various forums in the north since the Good Friday Agreement came into force. But like I said, it's imperative that the assembly is back up and running. It's imperative that there's an executive in place. We have to show that politics can work. And the last three years have shown that it doesn't
but
work.
Until Brexit, there was a bit of a push for
more discussions about United Ireland. And there was, I think, Laoghaire Radker was discussing it quite a lot before the vote. And that Fianna Fáil have also promised a white paper on United Ireland, has not materialised as of yet.
This particular draft agreement is one of the key elements is that the Northern Assembly needs to get back up and running. We need to have like everyone else, I aspire to United Ireland, but I'm also conscious that there are various different communities that have various, we'll say, allegiances in the north. They must be respected, and under the Good Friday Agreement it sets out clearly how we get to a point of a border poll, and we must respect that agreement in its entirety.
The Good Friday Agreement, the Constitution itself has it written into it.
Yeah, correct. But it's both sides. It's both the north and south.
I'm just watching the clock here, and I'm told I have to take another break, so we'll do that. But I want to come back to whether or not we should revisit the budget if we have a scenario which is not now a no-deal Brexit.
Email latedebate@rte.ie. The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we did only the other day have a budget which was specifically designed to deal with a possible no-deal Brexit situation. I see Brendan Howlin is very early out of the traps today saying if this deal does pass, and again, we've ifs and health warnings all over it, but saying that some of the tough measures that were introduced in that budget, for instance, not increasing welfare in line with the usual increases in line with inflation and that should be revisited. Would you go along with that, Ciarán O'Donoghue?
I wouldn't, because I think we brought in a budget which was to deal with a no-deal Brexit, but equally, with any Brexit, there's going to be fallout. And I think we have to be prudent. We have to ensure that we protect across a range of areas, because whatever Brexit deal goes through, there's going to be an impact on sectors up and down the country, and we have to be conscious of that. And I believe that the budget we've brought in is a budget for the year.
Jim?
Yeah, well, the budget last week had two aspects. Obviously, one was the $1.2 billion Brexit fund, which will not be drawn down in the event of a deal. The second aspect was it was a big spending budget. You know, spending on running the country in 2020 is now forecast to grow by $3.3 billion following the budget measures, an extra billion on health, an extra $690 million on social protection, and then a lot of extra teachers, guards, etc.
Which we need to do, Jim.
Yeah, the demographics are underestimated, Jim.
I know, but it was a very expansionary budget. The notion that we would turn around now in January and introduce another spending package like that is mad. We have a debt to real economic activity ratio of 104%. The global economic backdrop is under pressure. Our corporate tax system is under pressure.
But people were specifically told that the reason they weren't getting what they might have expected in this was because
Just look at Seamus Coffey in the Fiscal Advisory Council has said about the budget. I think that's what we should follow.
There's definitely been mixed views about this in terms of different sides of politics. In terms of one minister told me that there would be a temptation there to go again.
Well, particularly if there is an election, around the corner.
If you're thinking of the springtime, wouldn't it be nice for Pascal to come out in February and have found all this money down the back of the couch that he thought he didn't need, if the no deal...
Spending our corporation tax.
But at the same time, the prudence, as you've mentioned, with the fiscal council and all the rest, they've been pretty strict on saying, actually, our debt is massive. Corporation tax is something that we cannot be relying on. So will prudent Pascal actually
notwithstanding the provision there was to borrow $650 million as part of the $1.2 billion package, because much of the other was contingency in relation to social welfare. There was $150 million coming from the EU. There was $200 million that hadn't yet been spent on some measures. It was quite constrained and quite tight, because the demographics that were, you know, portrayed to have been provided for in the budget package right up to a week or two before the decisions were made was way off the mark when it came out. And Jim alluded to it in relation to health. The health spend is $1 billion up to stand still, it would appear. And it's similarly across education and many of the other service departments. And the prudence that has been talked about is not necessarily what it says on the table.
With due respect, Barry, Fianna Fáil are promising $4.3 billion over the first 6 months.
With due respect, we're out of time. We'll have you back in and have this debate again. Just a time for a couple of headlines. The Irish Times going at Brexit on knife edge. It's the same as last night's headline, I think. Brexit on knife edge after deal agreed. Johnson in race to win MP support for deal. It's my deal or no deal. There's a story in the Independent. Fine Gael heave against Swingate. TD Maria Bailey begins as no confidence vote tabled in constituency. We'll be hearing more about that tomorrow, I'm sure. And I've now lost my final... Oh, here we are. I have it. Tonight's programme was produced by Brian Lally and Sinead Mooney. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan, and Jamie Doyle was on sound. I want to thank my studio guests. I want to thank Páraí McLaughlin for going into the Foyle studio for us, and now it's over to Cathal Murray on Late Date.